with over 25 years of experience integrating mental health and spirituality, the author of Reclaiming Authenticity, When Ancestors Weep, and Redeeming the Bereaved. Here is Dr. James Houck.
Well, hello, everybody. Good afternoon, wherever you are in the world at this time. Welcome to Reclaiming Authenticity, finding your courage to reclaim that which has always been in you. And one of these broadcasts, I'll have to explain my life's journey to you in terms of how in the world did I come to this theme of reclaiming authenticity. It wasn't something that I stumbled on. It was just something that simply started to unfold more and more in my life. And as it did, I not only found my healing and empowerment, but I also found it was very healing and empowering to everyone. So it's very, you know, something that is all a part of us to reclaim that which has always been in us. And each and every week, these broadcasts focus on this integration of reclaiming authenticity in terms of our spirituality and our mental health. And I place that all within the context of our relationships with ourselves, others, and God or the divine. And it's interesting how whenever we focus on healing or we focus on finding our authentic self or our authentic voices, it always compels us to return to the relationships in our lives. Well, I'm Dr. James Houck, and if you would like more information about me or to leave me your comments about today's show, I invite you to visit the website. That is www.bbsradio.com/reclaiming authenticity, all one word there. So www.bbsradio.com/reclaiming authenticity. And these broadcasts are also podcasted now, so in case you want to go back and listen again, you can go back into the archives and catch up on previous shows. And if also you want to call in and be part of today's show, that would be great. I invite you to, if you never have before, I would say the phone lines are open, if you want to say that. And I'll be taking calls after the break, about 30 minutes into the show. We'll take a short break and come back. But I invite you to call the toll-free line. That number is 888-627-6008. 888-627-6008. And I want you to give me your insights or your comments or your thoughts on today's subject. Unforgiveness is like a pebble in our shoe. Okay? Powerful metaphor there. And for those who happen to be tuning in for the very first time, I just wanted to say welcome. It's always good to have new listeners. And just a little something about me is that I like to say that I am just deep down inside at the very core of my being. I'm a firm believer that all of us come into this world already equipped and graced with everything that we need in terms of the life that we want to live. Our giftedness, our skills, our talents, our strengths, character traits, so on and so forth. But as I explained to many, many people, we often go through life and maybe it's due to some unpleasant experiences, or if we are in the wrong place at the wrong time and something traumatic happens to us, that tends to place a distorted template over our so-called our spiritual vision, if you will, and our emotional bodies and our psychological bodies and maybe even our physical bodies as well. But anyway, our perceptions are now skewed because of something traumatic that has happened in our lives, or perhaps that we have yet to fully realize our giftedness, or just fully realize just how vast we are. And, you know, for one reason or another, we're told that, you know, that you'll never amount to anything, or whatever other voice you heard telling you that there's nothing special to you. I just want to say right here and now, do not believe that talk. okay? Because it comes from people who don't really know themselves. Because if people truly knew themselves, if people truly reclaimed their authenticity and their authentic voices, you wouldn't be saying something like that. You would want others to also embrace their authenticity because of just how empowering it is. And that realization that everybody is gifted. And so the work that I do with clients in the mental health field and helping them discover their authentic selves is often placed into let's go in and find the very best you. Let's go in and let's find what's hiding in your heart, or let's go in and find the core of who you are, and let's heal from some things, let's bring them out into the open, and also let's get used to the idea and just the daily practice of how then do we live our lives once we've discovered our authentic selves. Okay. So, and this is often exciting, very, very empowering in the lives of not only myself, but also the lives of others. Because when we do this, again, we come right back into our relationships, and we now go through life functioning from a place of healing and wholeness, and we truly embrace our uniqueness, or our hachetas, and we allow others to embrace their uniqueness as well. And it's kind of ironic, you know, part of the backstory of reclaiming authenticity is that as I kept coming back to relationships and you know, and so forth, it was just that something kept gnawing at me that, you know, the integration of spirituality and mental health and finding our authenticity and our authentic voices, it has to be placed in relationships. But here's the irony. Because we often go through life and we receive our deepest physical, emotional, psychological, even spiritual wounds in relationships. Okay? But however, and here's the irony part of it, we can discover our greatest healing, strength, peace, forgiveness, and love through healthier relationships. Okay. And one of the ways I've had some wonderful conversations with people over the past couple of weeks, and one of the ways people find their healing, strength, peace, and forgiveness and love through healthier relationships, it often begins through meditation. But there's a misunderstanding out there in today's world, you know, for some, not all, but for some, that, you know, many people engage in meditation in order to find this healing and grace and peace within themselves. But I came across one of the writings from the Buddhist Vietnamese teacher, Thich Nhat Hanh. And the way he described meditation is simply beautiful. And he says that meditation is not to get out of society, but to prepare for a re-entry into society. He says this is what's called engaged Buddhism. Meditation is not to get out of society, but to prepare for a re-entry into society. And he says that whenever we go to a meditation center or some other place, a quiet, secluded place, we may have the impression that we leave everything behind, you know, family and society and all the complications involved with them, and come as an individual person in order to practice and search for this peace. But he says you're already starting from a place of illusion. Because he says that in Buddhism, what he practices, there is no such thing as an individual. So it's definitely wonderful to go to a meditation center or to quietly just go and meditate and collect yourself. By all means, do that. Find that. Find what works. But remember, as much as it's tempted for us to say that, well, I'm just going to do this for a week or two or whatever, you know, just to get away from it all. Granted, we need that rest, okay? But remember, it prepares us for re-entry into society. And so the work that we do in meditation is, yes, for ourselves, But perhaps a healthier way to look at it is we meditate, or we are engaged in rituals or whatever spiritual practice for the sake of others. You know, for sake of somebody who is unable to meditate, we meditate for them. Or a person who is unable to find their authentic voice, we find our authenticity to then re-engage society to help others find their authenticity, and so forth, and so on. Okay, and it's interesting, you've heard me say this before if you're a regular listener, that these relationships just might be within our own families and coworkers and friends. Okay, and we'll talk more about that when we're, you know, going to be talking about forgiveness today, and we're going to put a little twist on it, that's for sure. But you know, first and foremost, you know, the forgiveness and kindness and compassion and love begins with how we treat ourselves. Okay, and just the kind of relationship that we have with ourselves. You know, who's staring back at us at the mirror? You know, when we look inside ourselves, who do we see? What do we see? Do we like what we see? Do we love ourselves? Are we compassionate with ourselves? And so forth. Because whenever we are compassionate with ourselves, we can certainly be more compassionate with others. It just opens up that world of understanding like nothing else. And when we are forgiving of ourselves, we then can be more forgiving with others. You know, it's just something, again, I have seen over the past couple of weeks, just the intolerance of, you know, or the unwillingness, I should say, for people to forgive. And I often wonder, you know, have they on some level forgiven themselves, or are they so rigid in their understanding that they hold themselves to an unrealistic, like, well, you know, I just, you know, I might be able to forgive others, but I just can't forgive myself for one reason or another. But then have they truly forgiven others? Okay. So, you know, all in all, and when we are able to forgive ourselves, certainly we can be more forgiving with others. And when we are able to live in gratitude with ourselves and everything, not just in terms of what we have received, but just simply everything, just being in gratitude with the little gifts here and there, we discover how this really opens up our hearts to be able to see and to live in gratitude with others. So all in all, transformation begins with us, but it's also meant for the betterment of others. Well, Carl Rogers, as you may have heard me said before, the founder of person-centered therapy, I came into the scene of the mental health counseling therapy a little too late. Dr. Rogers was already passed on, but his reading material and any kind of videos that you watch, just profound, because he really engaged people where they were. He met them where they were, and he believed wholeheartedly in backing people up, that he wasn't there to convert. He wasn't there to convince people. He was just, you know, there to engage them in such a profound way. And one of his more famous quotes that I truly love is this. He says that when another person is hurting or confused or troubled, maybe they're anxious or alienated or even terrified, or when he or she is filled with just doubting their self-worth or uncertainty as to their identity, then understanding on our part is called for. That gentle and sensitive companionship of an empathic stance, that presence, is what I call, that provides illumination and healing. And in such situations, deep understanding is, he believes, the most precious gift one can give to another. And that is so true. That is so true. Our presence speaks volumes, and not just how we carry ourselves, but these higher things that we had all along to go back in and reclaim, you know, our compassion, our forgiveness, our gratitude, our love for ourselves, and that peace. We don't even have to open our mouths. People know it just by watching us, looking at us, you know, and if we do speak, listening to us, but it's really, you know, just how we interact and kind of the vibe we give off, if you will. Okay. So this broadcast is really going to, you know, delve deep into, well, how do we do this? You know, how do we go about reclaiming our authentic selves? Where do we begin? You know, just there might be so much there that it's like, okay, you know, I'm anxious to get started, but where do I begin? Okay, so if you haven't done so already, strap on the proverbial seatbelt and hang on. Okay. Well, here we are in the month of May, actually the middle of May, and with the weather becoming nicer and nicer, you know, more and more people are getting out and walking. And of course, that's one of the best forms of exercise we can do, apart from, let's say, if you're into rock climbing or surfing or mountain biking or whatever else. Okay. But most people I know, they enjoy a good long walk or a hike through the woods or a forest or wherever. And no matter whether we're on a trail or a back road, sooner or later, we sometimes pick up a pebble in our shoe. Don't ask me how it gets there, because I'm still trying to figure that one out myself. But it is just interesting. When we go out for a walk, or if we're walking on a trail or a back road or something, sooner or later, we're going to get a pebble. Okay? You know, just think about it. You were moving along at a pretty good pace or whatever pace you want to, and you're at peace, and hopefully, you know, you don't have any pain in the knees or the hips, and, you know, and all of a sudden, you feel that pain at the bottom of your foot, and you realize somehow, some way, you've picked up a stone. You've picked up that pebble. Now, maybe your first thought is to ignore it. You know, it's just, after all, it just might be that annoyance you can tolerate, you know. And let's be honest with ourselves. Sometimes we just don't really want to stop and take off our shoe and, you know, kind of shake our boot or our shoe to get rid of that stone and put it back on, lace it up and go, you know, continue on. So we just keep, you know, walking along. We tell ourselves, okay, I can handle this. It's not too much further. I can do this. And as we continue on with this pebble in the shoe, it starts to hurt a little bit. You know, the annoyance starts to be a little painful. And so what do? If we don't want to stop, we start to shake our foot to shift the pebble to another area, let's say under your foot, that you can now tolerate for now. Or we might pound our foot on the ground to kind of move the pebble up to the, you know, the front of the shoe or the toe. Now the pebble is still in the shoe, and, you know, we've done something to actually minimize this pain, you know, but have we really? Because over time, and with the more steps that we take, this pain begins to intensify. And, you know, if we just keep ignoring it and it becomes even more painful and we press through and everything, okay, it's going to turn into a blister. Or we might even cut ourselves and then we bleed into our sock because of where the pebble had been rubbing. And when we can no longer tolerate the pain and we can no longer keep shifting the pebble back and forth, kicking it up, moving it back and so forth, we finally stop. And we take off our shoe and we shake the pebble free. Okay? We have all been there. Let's not kid ourselves. Okay? But let's stay with this pebble as a metaphor for something far greater than a pain in the foot, as it will. Okay? Because, you know, isn't it amazing what kind of bigger lesson a little pebble in the shoe can teach us? And you might be sitting there and going like, well, I don't get it. you know, it's just a pebble. It's just an annoyance. Take off the shoe and flick it free. You're good. Put your shoe back on. Keep going. But what if we begin to see everything in our lives as a metaphor? Okay. What if we begin to see everything that happens to us, or little instances or things that we consider as an annoyance or a disruption? Maybe that was intentional in the grand scheme of things. Maybe that was intentional to get our attention, so to speak, to pay attention to, okay, it's not really the pebble, but maybe it's a metaphor. You know, such as physical pain just might teach us something about our emotional pain or our spiritual pain. See, a pebble in the shoe, if we're aware, just might awaken us further to something else we need to take care of in our lives, where, you know, giving it a good shake isn't going to do anything. Okay. In fact, the pebble just might remind us of something that's quite painful for us, but that nobody else knows about. Okay. Well, perhaps the lesson is that, you know, we always need to deal with problems immediately. Could be. Right? Or the pebble in the shoe just might be the metaphor that teaches us that if we hold on to problems such as the pebble in the shoe, are there other aspects that we hang on to, other problems such as anger or bitterness or unforgiveness? Or let's go a little deeper with this metaphor. Perhaps the real issue, why we don't want to remove a pebble in our shoe, is because we're also dealing with the fact that we don't want to forgive. You know, we want to keep ourselves protected from further wounding. You know, that we're just going to tolerate this, just like the pebble in the shoe. It gets a little annoying. It starts to be painful, but nobody sees it. Nobody sees it, but we know it's there. And maybe it points to something deeper than that, that we just don't want to let our guard down and be wounded all over again. Okay. I think I had already told you the story of this, but I counseled a 14-year-old girl long time ago. She's probably a United States senator or something like that these days. But she and I got on the subject of, you got a boyfriend. Yeah, do you go to dances or anything? And she's like, no, I don't. I don't have a boyfriend. I don't go to dances. I just come right home. And, you know, and it's like, okay, well, someday, you know, no rush. And we started talking about love. And so I just asked her what her definition of love was. And she gave me the most extraordinary answer, in that she didn't believe in it. You know, and I was amazed by her answer, because I'm thinking to myself, okay, you're 14 years old. What happened that you don't believe in love? And the more we got into her story, the more, you know, love and being open and being vulnerable was very painful to her, because she was exploited, not just in terms of emotionally or psychologically, but also physically and sexually. Okay, so of course, you know, she had this stance of, you know, when you love, you're vulnerable. And so I don't want to be vulnerable, and therefore I do not love. And again, 14 years old, knowing and learning a lesson like this. And we talked a little bit more, and she had some interesting dreams that we also worked through. And she was able to see where this fear of being vulnerable came from. And she also realized that what it was also keeping her from, you know, keeping her from loving herself, keeping her from being at peace with herself, keeping her from forgiving herself, and so on and so forth. Okay. So, you know, pay attention to everything in your life, because if we look at things as metaphor, great, great lessons to teach us. Well, returning to the pebble in the shoe, came across an interesting quote exactly on this. You know, Muhammad Ali, the great boxer that we had, who passed away, I believe it's a year ago, maybe 2-3 years ago. I'm not quite sure. But he said, "It isn't the mountains ahead to climb that wears you out. It's the pebble in your shoe." You know, and that is just a great quote right there, because he himself had overcome many challenges. But it's interesting that the day in and day out problems that we want to ignore, or we think, well, we can press on instead of really taking care of it and so forth. You know, very powerful. It's not the mountains ahead of us to climb that wears us out. It's the pebble in our shoe. And another way to look at this pebble of the shoe and looking at it as, say, unforgiveness. And as we're talking about forgiveness, this can really come as a shock to many. And that is that forgiveness very much has to do with ourselves. You know, it's not all about the other person. You know, if somebody has hurt our feelings or has wronged us or something, it's also about self-healing. Self-empowerment, self-liberation. We are very much a part of the, you know, for lack of a better phrase, just the forgiveness equation here. Okay, and this came home, you know, just a reality for Archbishop Desmond Tutu. He was South Africa's former Anglican archbishop. And I think at one point, I forget the year, but he also received a Nobel Peace Prize. And he said, "We don't forgive to help the other person, although it's part of it. We don't forgive for others, although that's part of it." He says, "But mainly we forgive for ourselves." Forgiveness, in other words, is the best form of self-interest. And I like it to, you know, carrying around just a huge boulder. You know, and the pain and just the heaviness of unforgiveness, because sometimes we don't want to let that go. And that little pebble in the shoe, which started off as an annoyance, and like, well, okay, I'll just tough it out, has now become a rock, a boulder that we have to lug around with us everywhere we go, because the pain and the bitterness and the resentment is so heavy. It's so pervasive in everything that we do. Well, I also read a survey by the Fetzer Institute that does great studies on mental health and physical health, just the intersection of that. And they came out with a report years ago that said 62% of Americans think that they need more forgiveness in their personal lives. Okay. That's a good percentage, okay, a little bit more than half. But how do people go about finding forgiveness, or let alone walking in a state of forgiveness? Okay. In her book, The Fault of Violence, there's a theologian, Marjorie Sachaki, and she has an interesting interpretation on forgiveness. You know, she says it's the willingness or willing the well-being of an offender instead of having ill will toward him or her. She says it's not a once-for-all kind of event, but it's time-spent event. It's a process. And although forgiveness does not require feelings of love or acceptance, it can make room for warm feelings or acceptance for both the victim and the violator. Forgiveness thus can then be the foundation for transformation. I like that. I think that's just an interesting way to take a look at forgiveness. But a lot of people struggle, as much as, you know, this Fetzer Institute report of 62% of Americans think they need more forgiveness. What does that say about the people who, yeah, okay, I need more forgiveness in my life, but, yeah, that's, you know, you don't know how I've been hurt. You do not know how I've been betrayed. You do not know how my life has been turned upside down because I can't go back to the way things were. You know, I'm the one who got hurt, and therefore the offender should do something for me. You know, but again, you can hear the bitterness seeping in a statement like that. you know, true. When we live in a society, we don't have to go too far, but then just the front page of the news to see how humanity lashes out at others, you know, how the woundedness just continues. And so people become quite bitter. But we're talking about, how do we get out of that? How do we take that pebble out of our shoe, metaphorically speaking? Okay, because if we think like, well, you know, somebody should do something for me because they've hurt me, that kind of thinking often traps people in their pain and really offers a plausible solution. Okay, especially if the one who hurt us had no idea they did something wrong, or they just don't feel like making amends. You know, it's, you know, on one hand, we could be sitting here and saying to ourselves, well, I'm ready to forgive, but I need them to come forward and acknowledge it. Now, they may not. They may not see the need to be able to do that. And then what do? Are we left with the rest of our lives just hanging on to that? Or is there a way to let go of that, to say, if they come forward, great. If they don't, great. I'm not going to walk around with that weight in my gut or on my shoulders anymore. If they don't realize it, or if they've been made aware of something they've done wrong, but yet don't think they need to apologize, that's on them. That's what they need to carry then. Okay. So, you know, carrying this hurt is definitely a burden, you know, and on many levels. You know, it's a burden to our social and physical and mental well-being. You know, however, you know, forgiveness eases this, so to speak, and is not surprisingly, is linked also to improved health and quality of life. You know, and that's some of the more fascinating studies that are out there. You know, just when people are able to forgive and let go, and they find that peace, they find their authentic voice and so forth, and really start to reclaim their healing. For some strange reason, their blood pressure starts to lower, which is interesting. They have less stress in their life. They feel better. They sleep better. They eat better. They're happier. They laugh. They might even break out in a song or a whistle, something that they may have never done in a long, long time because of that bitterness or that unforgiveness or that pebble in the shoe, so to speak, has been there and robbing the person of that peace and that joy. Okay. So, in a nutshell, there's a lot of theories out there that, you know, come our way in terms of pain and so forth, that, you know, just in general will kick up a lot of stress in our lives. You know, just say somebody has hurt our feelings or we've been overlooked or whatever. And we feel that stress on a daily basis, or we feel unappreciative, or we feel whatever. Okay, and it just has its way of kind of seeping through all other areas, emotional and biologically, definitely. And it just starts to erode our health. Okay, and just keep in mind that whenever people's deep wounds are not healed, these wounds can become vortexes of troubled waters, and it's intertwined with their own instincts for survival. And that's what we can get caught up in. You know, who's going to take care of me? Who's going to forgive me? How can I find my peace? How can I keep going? How can I get rid of this bitterness? Well, we have to take into consideration, are we even asking those questions? Or are we so consumed with, well, it's somebody else's problem to deal with. It's somebody else's, you know, but we kind of lock ourselves away all the while, letting it just start to eat ourselves, you know, the inner part of ourselves, psychologically, emotionally, and physically. Well, if you would like to call in, I definitely want to hear your thoughts, your heart on this subject. Again, that number is 888-627-6008. And as I said at the beginning, I'm going to be taking your calls after the break. Again, you are listening to Reclaiming Authenticity, and I am your host, Dr. James Houck. I'll be back with you in 1 minute. Hi, welcome back. I am Dr. James Houck, and you are listening to Reclaiming Authenticity. Again, just before we go further in today's show, I just want to remind you about the topic for next week. It is May 21st. Oh my gosh, we're going to be out of May soon, and then like welcome to June. Okay, but we'll dwell on that when we get here. But the subject I'm going to be talking about is the persona of who we are. The persona of who we are. So we're going to take a little bit of a little look at Carl Jung and his understanding of just the different roles that we take on in society. He likens it to the different masks that we wear, or what do we present to others when we're out and about or we're home. So in other words, will the real person please stand up? Okay. So I invite you to tune in next Friday, May 21st, for the persona of who we are. All right. Well, earlier in the show, I was talking about what to do when we get a pebble in the shoe. You know, not if, but when. Okay? And don't sit there and say, I've never got a pebble in the shoe, because yes, you have. Okay? Everybody has. Whether you're walking on a beach, you're going to get some sand, maybe in areas in which you don't want sand, or walking along, it happens to all of us. No matter how tight we lace up the shoes, a pebble can always find its way in there. Okay? So what do we do when we, you know, get that pebble in the shoe and it's like, ooh, there it is. And we get that little bit of stabbing pain. I mean, do we ignore it? Do we stop immediately and remove it? Or do we keep walking and we are content to just kind of like shake our shoe and our foot around in order to avoid the unbearable pain that will eventually occur because it's rubbing? So I also introduced the notion of, let's look at this pebble in the shoe as a metaphor. As a metaphor for something far greater than just simply having a pain in our foot. And it's amazing what kind of bigger lesson a little pebble in the shoe can teach us. Because if we are aware, and if we begin to see everything in our lives as a metaphor, such as physical pain, that just might teach us something about our emotional or spiritual pain. You know, and with the pebble in the shoe, it just might awaken us to something else that we need to take care of in our lives. Okay, and with a pebble in the shoe, nobody else sees that. We're aware of it because we have the pain, but nobody else is. And that just might speak to other areas of our lives in which people have no idea the kind of pain that we might be carrying around. Okay, and the same goes, you know, for as we're dealing with other people. We have no idea the pain that they are carrying around. Well, this past week, I've had some pretty interesting conversations with kids, with teenagers, about forgiveness. And let me tell you, folks, if you've never sat down and listened to a kid or a teenager talk about forgiveness, they have a lot to say on this subject. Okay. They, you know, they are not stupid by any means. They see things, they hear things, they feel things. So let me just say, they have a lot to say on the subject of forgiveness. And so it's always interesting to have those conversations. And all I have to do is just kind of toss it out there and like, well, what do you think about so-and-so who wasn't forgiven? Or what do you think about so-and-so who was forgiven? Or were there times when you were hurt? Or were there times, you know, that you hurt somebody? And it's interesting, the depth of those conversations come whenever we're talking about video games. Okay? Video games. And I got to tell you, there's something up with these kids and Fortnite. All the kids I talked to the past couple of weeks, everybody's playing Fortnite. You know, it's just like that's the game to play. Okay. So I was like, all right, you know, just, well, tell me about it. I've never played it. So kind of walk me through. And the kids go on like, well, you can, you have different skins that you can get, and, you know, you have to go here or there and avoid being killed, or you can chase some people. And it's interesting to me that through the media of video games, how we could use those as a way to teach kids about real lessons in life. Or in other words, one of my favorite quotes from a teacher of mine, you know, he would say, everything is a teachable moment for us. And it's like, I get that. You know, the older I get, the more I see it. So, for instance, let's say you're in a video game, okay, and you are trying to reach an end or a goal. And whether it's getting to, let's say, a finish line or to reach the top of a mountain, or maybe you have to find a hidden treasure, something that you have to do in the game in order to win. Okay. And most of the time, it's going to take several attempts to succeed. Or in other words, no one person playing a game has ever reached the goal of the game without making a few mistakes along the way and having to start over. And herein lies the lesson about forgiveness. When we forgive, or when we ask another person for forgiveness, it's like we've been given another chance to start over. You know, we can start over with ourselves. We can start over with someone else. Or we can start over even with God. It's a chance to hit the reset button and say, okay, I know where I made my mistakes, and this is exactly what I want to do from here on out. Forgiveness allows us to re-enter society. We re-enter society a little bit wiser, more engaged in living in gratitude, because we know just what that means to us. We know how much we've been forgiven of. And unforgiveness causes us to withdraw from others. You know, and again, I read that quote earlier in the broadcast about Thich Nhat Hanh, and I'll share it with you again. He says that when people go to meditate, they often think that meditation is you know, to get out of society. He says, but that's all wrong. It's like meditation prepares us for reentry into society. Well, so does forgiveness, okay? Because it's not just about us. And when we have unforgiveness, we don't feel like being around others. It just has that natural part of us that just wants us to withdraw because we don't want to be bothered. Or because of maybe we have to make amends and so forth, okay? But we can certainly apply the same analogy of this pebble in the shoe, you know, or metaphor in our lives, especially when it comes to forgiveness or gratitude. You know, most of the time society wants to treat these themes of forgiveness and gratitude as separate or individual. Yet when it comes to reclaiming our authentic selves, our spirituality, our mental health, forgiveness and gratitude can never be separated. Or we can try to make this out to be like a which came first, a chicken or the egg kind of dilemma. But in all actuality, I've never met a person who didn't express gratitude in all that they do and say without also having forgiveness in their heart. And vice versa. I've never met a person who didn't have forgiveness in their heart without also expressing gratitude in all that they say and all that they do. You know, so in a sense, we could say that forgiveness and gratitude go hand in hand, just like peanut butter and jelly or peas and carrots, if you're a fan of Forrest Gump. You know, because when we both have forgiveness and gratitude, it opens up the heart like nothing else in our lives and allows an authentic love of not just ourselves, but also others to emerge. But how often are we content to keep walking with this pebble in the shoe, knowing that with each step that we take, the pain is going to keep shooting through our feet and eventually up our leg? So how do we go about cultivating forgiveness and gratitude and love? Well, just like the conversation I had with the kids in the video games, you know, if you're a parent, or let's say that you are also a grandparent, you know, use the analogy, sit down with them, play video games, and when they make a mistake, when they, you know, have to start over in the game, just say, hey, pause that for a second. Have you ever thought about, you know, when we do something wrong, that we have to, you know, start over? But how do we start over? We start over by apologizing. We start over by forgiving. We start over by saying, you're more important to me than anything else. So I don't want to be, you know, the one who says I have to be right. I want to be the one who wants to be in a right relationship with you. And forgiveness allows me to do that. So if we need to ask for forgiveness, or if we need to forgive others, you know, go with the video game metaphor. It is perfect. Kids eat that up because that's their world. That's what they understand. Okay. But let's go a little bit deeper. And just in case you don't play video games, or you're not a lover of video games, you know, how do we then go about cultivating forgiveness and gratitude and love? Well, it's easier than what we think. We often have to begin with the most difficult people in our lives, and that just could be our family. Now, granted, that may not be easy, but it's easy to understand how to do it. Okay. Offering forgiveness, asking for forgiveness, that takes courage. And let's not kid ourselves here. Okay. Pain is real. Forgiveness and gratitude takes courage. But when you find it, when it finally bears fruit in your life, it is powerful. It is transformative. And you want to see love just shoot through families, and that acceptance, that peace, and that grace. That's powerful. So forgiveness and gratitude has to begin with our families, because this is often where we experience some of the most pain and hurt in our lives. You know, the psychological pain, the emotional pain, the physical pain, even the spiritual pain. And we have to begin with our family of origin issues, because these are the first people who gave us a sense of how the world works. But I would like us to expand this definition of family to include not just immediate and extended family members, but also family members that have gone on before us, as well as those who will come after us. Okay? Follow me on this. It was less than a week ago, we celebrated Mother's Day. And Mother's Day, right up there with Christmas, is just hyped all over the place. We see it on advertisements. You pick up a newspaper, and there they have, you know, the inserts there, Mother's Day specials and so forth. So a lot of hype, a lot of advertisement, a lot of flowers are purchased, a lot of cards. You know, Hallmark can just, you know, take care of an entire wall of greeting cards just on Mother's Day. And, you know, some mothers get breakfast in bed, or some are taken out for dinner. When, you know, it's like a special day to treat mom. Okay. And again, I just had some great conversations with kids. It's like, okay, don't you stiff mom on Mother's Day. That's going to come back to get you. All right. But in all seriousness, I've also sat with many, many women who, for them, Mother's Day is downright painful and filled with gut-wrenching memories. I've listened to stories of how their mothers were not there for them in one form or another, or moms who were absent. You know, they were there, but they weren't. Or maybe the moms were out of the picture, or maybe the moms were just unable to nurture them because they themselves were never cared for. You know, women who struggled, women who were either silenced or allowed themselves to be silenced. And therefore, you know, they might have been biological mothers, but that nurturing quality was just not there. Well, I came across years and years ago a wonderful prayer that actually it's a prayer for, you know, Mother's Day, which, by the way, Mother's Day is highly attended. You see a little bump in church attendances all throughout the United States, you know, because it's something special that moms want to go to church and they want their families to go with them and so forth. And especially grandmothers, they're just like, no, what? No excuses today. You're coming with me. Okay. But I found this prayer, you know, because for the longest time I'm wrestling with, you know, I get it. Mother's Day is great. It's wonderful. Let's celebrate it. But the more I began to interact and the more I listened to other women, the more I realized just how ignorant I was of, well, doesn't everybody celebrate Mother's Day? Okay. So I want to share this prayer with you. And I'll even put this up on the website a little bit later. So if you want to copy it, this actually comes out of a United Methodist hymnal. So if you happen to have one laying around, you'll find it as well. But it's under the heading, The Festival of the Home. And it is a prayer that I said is just beautifully captures not just mothers on Mother's Day, but the celebration of women in general. It says, we pray for our mothers who have given us life and love, that we may show them reverence and love. We also pray for mothers who have lost a child through death, that their faith may give them hope and their family and friends support and console them. We also pray for women, though without children of their own, who, like mothers, have nurtured and cared for us. For mothers who have been unable to be a source of strength, who have not responded to their children, and have not sustained their families. Loving God, as a mother gives life and nourishment to her children, so you, too, watch over your children. Bless these women that they may be strengthened as mothers. And let the example of their faith and love shine forth. And grant that we, their sons and daughters, may honor them always with a spirit of profound respect. I cannot tell you how many women I have had in my life who, yes, they've had children of their own. Yes, they've raised families and so forth. But some did not have families of their own, who had such powerful, nurturing qualities that I was tremendously blessed and honored to call them teacher, friend, mother, and so forth. Let's not overlook the people in our lives. Let us work through the pain that perhaps is brought up when we think about Mother's Day and Father's Day. Let us always work to restore the relationships that we have, first with ourselves, then with our families, then with others. Because in all honesty, is it really worth being right at the cost of damaging right relationships? It's not. I would rather be in a right relationship. I would rather offer forgiveness. I would rather throw my ego to the side and say, your relationship with me values so much. It's not a question of whether or not I need to be right or wrong or whatever. It's I want to be right with you. Well, I'm Dr. James Houck, and you have been listening to Reclaiming Authenticity. In the meantime, I just want to bless you and say, you know, have a good week, be at peace, be careful out there still, behave yourselves, I will share with you so much more next week, 3:00 Eastern Standard Time, noon Pacific Time. Take care, and God bless.
for an answer, or just to leave 1,000 comments, or prodding to buy a book by Dr. Hauk. It's all there. Just wander on over to ReclaimingAuthenticity.com and click around. And we'll see you next Friday at noon Pacific time on PBS Radio TV.